Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Before we get going with this episode, check out what's going on over at Patreon. Here's a preview of our Little Alarms series, only available on Patreon. Do you think there are people, you know, because I've heard people say, I didn't know about Travis Kelce until he started dating Taylor Swift. But do you think people are like, huh, I didn't know about Taylor Swift until he started dating Travis.
Yes.
She started dating Travis Kelce. I don't
smaller,
think so.
I think I it's a smaller. So. No. I guarantee you there are some sports fans out there who have followed Travis Kelce's career for whatever, how long he's been around.
And, no. like, and are just
come
finding
on.
Out about Taylor Swift. Impossible.
Go to patreon.com/thealarmist and subscribe today. Now on to our episode.
I was born with a special gift. The ability to mentally transform any situation into the worst case scenario in my own brain. My therapist calls my gift catastrophizing. And that's why I'm uniquely qualified to scrutinize and analyze history's greatest disasters and find out who's to blame. They say history repeats itself. Not on my watch. My name is Rebecca Delgado Smith, and I am the Alarmist.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for tuning into The Alarmist, a comedy podcast where we talk about history's greatest tragedies and figure out who's to blame. Today, we're discussing the Dust Bowl. Here's what you need to know.
Lots of folks back east, they say, is leaving home every day, beating the hot old dusty way to the California line. Across the desert sands they roll, getting out of that old dust bowl. They think they're going to a sugar bowl, but here's what they find.
On the afternoon of April 14, 1935, a blizzard of dust blew through several plains states, moving an estimated 300,000 tons of topsoil. It would come to be known as Black Sunday. The storm was one of many that had ravaged the middle of the country. A reporter for the New Republic wrote, quote, "Cars come to a standstill, for no light in the world can penetrate that swirling muck." The origin of this terrible series of storms can be traced back to decades of migration activity and poor farming practices. The Great Plains is a vast expanse of semi-arid flatlands to the east of the Rocky Mountains. They stretch to the south from West Texas, up to Montana, and beyond into Canada. White settlers first came to the region in the early 19th century, establishing military posts, and more followed during the mass migration spurred on by Manifest Destiny. Railroad expansion and laws like the Kansas-Nebraska Act and the Homestead Acts of 1862 saw a further increase in population in the Great Plains. Many settlers took to farming, and by 1930, 30% of the Great Plains in America was converted to cropland, with a large portion of the remaining grassland used for livestock grazing. The settlers were new to farming, however, and they would pull up indigenous grass and till the soil indiscriminately to meet the demands of the rapidly growing nation. Then came a severe drought. Record low rainfall caused the topsoil to dry up and break apart into tiny particles. Without native grass to hold the soil in place, high winds picked up the fine topsoil and created massive dust storms. Over the course of several years, these dust storms ravaged towns and cities in the Great Plains, affecting crops, livestock, and living conditions. These storms often traveled east, causing confusion and destruction. This cataclysmic event was intensified by the impact of the Great Depression. Many, especially in the Texas and Oklahoma panhandle, were forced to abandon their homes and look for work in adjacent regions, a large amount migrating to California. Property values declined due to the erosion of the land, and the economic impact of the Dust Bowl would continue to be felt for years to come. It would go down as one of the most devastating human-created ecological disasters in American history. Fun facts, aka death stats. By 1934, an estimated 35 million acres of formerly cultivated land had been rendered useless for farming, while another 125 million acres, an area roughly three quarters the size of Texas, was rapidly losing its topsoil. On May 11, 1934, a massive dust storm 2 miles high traveled 2,000 miles to the East Coast, blotting out monuments such as the Statue of Liberty and the U.S. Capitol. The worst dust storm occurred on April 14, 1935, as many as 3 million tons of topsoil blowing east at 60 miles per hour and ending 200 miles out into the Atlantic are estimated to have blown off the Great Plains during Black Sunday. Present-day studies estimate that some 1.2 billion tons of soil were lost across 100 million acres of the Great Plains between 1934 and 1935, the drought's most severe period. The 1936 heat wave was so extreme, it is considered a once-in-a-100-year event, with 25% of all U.S. daily heat records set during that summer, and half of such records set during the 1930s. Temperatures routinely topped 110 degrees Fahrenheit. By 1940, with 19 states affected, roughly 2.5 million people left the Dust Bowl states of Texas, New Mexico, Colorado, Nebraska, Kansas, and Oklahoma. It was one of the largest migrations in American history. In total, the Dust Bowl killed around 7,000 people from dust pneumonia or inhaling dust in the air, and left 2 million without homes. With us today, we have producer Clayton Early.
Hello.
Fact checker Chris Smith.
Hi.
And our very special guest today is Mike Rugnetta. Hi, Mike.
Hello.
Hi. Mike is a writer, a producer, and he is also the host of the new podcast, Never Post. Mike, can you tell us a little bit about your show?
Yeah, I would love to. Never Post is...
Great title, by the way.
Thank you very much. It is a podcast about the internet. So, you know, maybe giving you a sense of some of our advice about the current online ecosystem. What's probably the best way to describe it is just like what we've talked about recently. One of our producers, Georgia, did a story about like how the infrastructure of social media does and does not support the process of mourning and grieving, which was really fascinating. I did a segment about, I don't know if you guys know this, like the live streamers who spend a long time trying to throw a ping pong ball into a solo cup after bouncing it off of a bunch of like pots and pans. So we've I did a
I've seen like the abbreviated clip where like they finally get it, but I can't imagine watching hours of them trying to do it.
Yeah, like the thing where it's like, you know, you see like it took us 3 hours to throw this playing card onto this dart or whatever. Yeah, so we did a segment about that. We've done segments about like posting disease, which is this sort of like informal diagnosis of when someone maybe posts online a little bit too much to a degree where it's like maybe kind of bad for them, but they can't stop.
Yeah. Ooh, a posting disease. That sounds
I can think of a few people.
Medical. Yeah.
Sounds so super clinical.
Did you coin that? Yeah. Have you trademarked that term? You might want to.
We Dr. all Mike. Suffer, I think, maybe a little bit, you know?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Now, Mike, maybe this will maybe this question will overlap. You know, we'd like to start off the show by asking our guest, what is something that's recently alarming you? What's something that's keeping you up at night?
So the thing that is keeping me up, like as recently as last night, is today. And actually, I haven't looked at the internet in a couple hours because I've been in meetings. So it might have happened. Mm-hmm. The first oral arguments are being heard at the Supreme Court surrounding Murthy versus Missouri. Have you guys followed this at all? It's like this thing where I think it's Louisiana and Texas basically said roughly, and I am not a lawyer, so don't come for me.
Okay.
Oh, we will.
So starting with this idea that like the government colluded with social media in order to suppress fundamentally conservative viewpoints. But what the government was doing was working with social media to reduce COVID disinformation.
Uh-huh.
Right.
So, of course, they said, oh, no, we're combating disinformation, not trying to suppress conservative viewpoints. That has made its way to the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
And the stakes are basically, are social media platforms allowed to moderate?
Yeah. Right.
Or is moderation fundamentally an act of censorship?
Oh boy!
So that's a little scary.
There's a difference there, distinguishing between persuasion and coercion, is like one of the sort of key sort of differences. But that could be really scary.
It could be bad.
Well, you know, by the time this airs next week, we might be living in a different world, and that will keep me up at night.
All of our faces
we'll
could
be allowed to actually
out.
Post.
I'm getting so tired of living in a different world constantly.
Yeah, I know.
Can we just choose one for a little while?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, let's choose the world of the Dust Bowl, maybe.
Okay.
Yeah. For a little while. Just an hour. Trust me, you're going to want to get out of here soon.
Yeah, pre-social media. We'll go back in time a little bit and simplify.
A simpler time when, like,
or
biblical
is it?
Proportions of, like, dust and plagues, like,
those are the
destroyed
problems that we were
the country.
Your worries were just dust and crickets and the existence
Rain.
Of the tractor.
Yeah.
Jackrabbits.
Yeah. So I watched a documentary, a Ken Burns documentary on the Dust Bowl last night, and it was one of the most anxiety-inducing documentaries I've seen in a long time. Not because all I kept thinking about was cleaning and dusting your house and sweeping dust out of your house,
for it to re-enter.
I mean, you don't even have the satisfaction of like 1 or 2 days where it's a nice clean house, you know, all that work. And I know that sounds so small, but I think that drove many people
over the edge.
Yep. Sure. Yeah. Not to mention all like if it's settling so quickly on your house, like what are you ingesting if there's that much dust in the
exactly.
environment?
Exactly.
You were ingesting dust. And a lot of people, there was this thing called dust pneumonia that emerged during the Dust Bowl. But we are getting ahead of ourselves. We got to talk about how it all started.
Okay.
Dust pneumonia is posting disease, right? It's the posting disease of the era.
Yes. Careful. You have to really be careful. Mm-hmm, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can't. It's just around you.
You wanted to go outside. You knew you'd get dust pneumonia, but
posting is like breathing these days.
Mm-hmm. Mm, Chris.
Nice, Chris.
Wow.
Thanks.
Posting
guys.
Is breath. Sorry. Go on, Rebecca.
Where do we start? We should start by putting Manifest Destiny up on the board.
Oh, classic.
Yeah, sure.
Classic American tradition.
Oh, yes. So this is from Smith College Center. Manifest Destiny, a phrase coined in 1845, was the belief that white Americans were called by God to expand the United States and spread democracy and capitalism across North America. This belief drove much of the U.S. territorial expansion during the 19th century and led to a large influx of inexperienced farmers who engaged in poor land management practices to the Great Plains.
Mm-hmm.
Setting the stage for disaster, right, is the belief that we gotta get out there and get our land.
Right.
And first of all, throughout this whole, you know, podcast, we're going to be talking about like these huge land grabs. All I can think about, too, is just how these lands were obviously taken from the native people and the tribes that were living in them. And, you know, they were relocated just so these people could have these farms.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about these practices because I feel like we can put them up on the board.
Poor farming practices or what? How do you want to phrase it?
These were more like federal land policies promoting farming.
Okay.
This is from history.com. After the Civil War, a series of federal land acts coaxed pioneers westward by incentivizing farming in the Great Plains. The Homestead Act of 1862, which provided settlers with 160 acres of public land, was followed by the Kincaid Act of 1904 and the Enlarged Homestead Act of 1909. These acts led to a massive influx of new and inexperienced farmers across the Great Plains. And just for a little background on this, because I didn't know what the Homestead Act was, they were trying to incentivize moving and settling in the West. And it was open to all U.S. citizens or intended citizens and resulted in 4 million homestead claims, although 1.6 million deeds in 30 states were actually officially obtained. This is from Montana, North Dakota, Colorado, Nebraska. But to achieve this, thousands of Native Americans were forced from their lands and onto Indian reservations to make way for homesteaders. To make a claim, homesteaders paid a filing fee of $18. So it had a $10 fee. Talk about mortgage prices these days, right? It had a $10 fee to make a temporary claim on the land, a $2 commission to the land agent, and an additional $6 final payment to receive an official patent on the land. Land titles could also be purchased from the government for $1.25 per acre.
Whoa.
Following 6 months of proven residency. So you could buy more land once you were there for $1.25.
You got to put the government on the board, right? I mean, there's no way you don't.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Like this is the instantiation of Manifest Destiny, like the abstract concept. It's the government doing it.
Right.
Yeah, really pushing this land. They knew, I don't know if they actually knew that this land was not good for farming.
They had this belief that rain would follow the plow.
Right, which we'll discuss later once we get into their farming techniques. Yeah.
Is it the land that's not good for farming, or they just weren't doing the appropriate type of farming for the land for that region? Do we know?
Good question.
It's gotta have been both, right?
It was both, but it was more so the land was not like built for it. It's semi-arid. Okay. It only gets 20 inches, I think, of rainfall annually.
Right.
It may have been good for some farming, but maybe not as much.
Not
farming
like crops to feed the nation kind of farming.
Yeah.
Which is what it turned into.
Right. Yeah, right. The world, right? Because of World War I or whatever.
Exactly.
Yes. So let's put World War One up on the board because this is huge.
Do it.
This is a big one.
Do it.
So, okay. So we're setting the picture. So now we've got all these homesteaders who have purchased this land. Some of them are not, they're new to farming. You know, they just bought this land. Okay. Now we have to do something with it. It's a lot of land that needs to be tended to. And World War One happens. The prices for wheat go up,
skyrocket,
right? And this is being also pushed by the government,
right?
This is from the State Historical Society of Iowa. During World War One, the U.S. government had vigorously encouraged farmers to expand crop and livestock outputs to feed the army and the U.S. allies in Europe. They guaranteed high prices and appealed to the farmers' patriotism through slogans like "Food will win the war." Mm-hmm. Farmers borrowed to buy new machinery to replace the labor lost by sons and hired hands drafted into the military. So, I mean, they are just putting a lot of money. All of these farmers, they have all this land. They're buying. They're taking them, the government, up on the $1.25 an acre. You know, they're expanding their land. They're buying this new machinery. They're getting loans out to pay for the new machinery.
Right.
So, I mean, there's just a lot of people to feed at the time. And they want, you know, they're paying like something like $2 a bushel for wheat, which is a lot of money at the time. And I mean, think about it. I mean, you could buy an whole acre plot of land for $18. Yeah. You know? So, and you know, this is a few years later. So let's say inflation, but still.
No,
you know,
this is like 70 years later from that homesteading, or like 60.
Well, yes, 60. yes.
Nonetheless, it's a lot of money.
Not just that, not just like what the farmers are spending on the machinery and all that stuff, but there are also like businesses that are starting to pop up in these towns that are dependent on the economy of the wheat, right? Mm-hmm. So you've got the local hardware store, you've got the local pharmacy, and, you know, this is all dependent on like the economy.
Mm-hmm.
And the assumption too, that the need for this wheat, this surplus need of all of a sudden is like going to remain constant, because as soon as that slows down, then what is your economy based on, right?
Folks, you telling me this is a bubble? Was there a wheat bubble?
we're telling you it was a wheat bubble, Mike. That's exactly. Put it up on the board. The bubble, the wheat bubble.
Yes.
Oh yeah. I love that. Let's put that up.
A wheat bubble.
And so what happens? There are these new farming techniques because we need more wheat, which I feel like we should put the I don't know if we can blame the new farming techniques, but let's put them up on the board. Okay. Just so we could
talk
about it.
What about uninformed? You don't want to like blame them, because everybody was like kind of doing what they thought was the best thing at the time. But it's like inexperienced farmers.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Well, in this documentary, they call them briefcase farmers.
Well, these are interesting. That was different.
Are those the companies that came later after everything was ruined?
Briefcase farmers, which we can put them up on the board. Okay. They were those who would buy land. They would plant the seeds, because wheat was known to just grow as long as it rained. You know, wheat would just grow on itself. Once you plowed the land and planted the seeds, it would just grow very easily. So these farmers would do that and then leave. So they'd come back like 5 months later and then, you know, cut the crop and do it all over. And they were really disliked by the local farmers who were actually tending to the land. So these were like,
there's a
people who had no experience.
There's a part in all I know about the Dust Bowl I learned from basically Grapes of Wrath. There's a part in the chapter that describes what happens to Tom Joad's family, where he describes, he like is mad at the guys who come and plant things and then leave. Like he sort of tells them off in this really great way where he's like, you know, if a man tends to his farm and he's there, he's his land. He's, you know, like he's big and he's full of life and he works hard and, you know, it might be tough, but like he's full. And if a man gets land, plants and then leaves, he's also his land and he's empty and he can't think and he has nothing to show. And it's this very like hardcore, you know, we are from here and we work here.
Right.
Salt of the earth kind of. Yeah. That's cool. Well, that's exactly what that is.
It's like, is that like equivalent to like gentrification? Like they're there, like they've been there farming and this guy's just coming in to like, you know,
white people won't go away.
Right.
In this case, some of the white guys did go away and that was the problem. Yeah. I think it's also,
it's like the Airbnb situation during the housing crisis.
That's a great analogy.
Yeah.
Yes, you know, I have all these people who need this and yet, you know, there are these empty houses.
It beats mine. I was going to say it's like when you haven't gotten your food at In-N-Out yet, so you put two little ketchups to save a table. You put two little ketchups on it to save it and then wait for your food.
If a man has two ketchups and leaves,
Works sometimes.
What do you mean? It's because, you know, at In-N-Out, you have to fill your little cup of ketchup.
Well, these guys planted seeds like and then they went away and did other things. Like it's not sitting at the table, you know,
you're saving it.
To save the table, just putting two little, we don't have to linger on this, but I'm happy to.
It's almost like actually, Chris, if like you're at In-N-Out, but like two McDonald's ketchup packets
I understand what Chris is saying for the first time ever. I understand what Chris is saying.
Okay, let's move on.
Yeah,
well, if anyone else understands what Chris is saying, please write
we'll put up a poll on the Patreon.
But okay, so I liked Mike what you said about the inexperienced farmers, right? Mm-hmm. Putting them up on the board,
right?
Okay, this is from How Stuff Works. A post-World War I recession led farmers to try new mechanized farming techniques to increase profits. Many bought plows and other farming equipment, and between 1925 and 1930, more than 5 million acres of previously unfarmed land was plowed. With the help of mechanized farming, farmers produced record crops during the 1931 season. So they're working the land, and as they're doing it, they're taking away this like native grass that grows in the region. It's been there forever, right? The land has figured out a way that this is the best vegetation for the area,
right? sort of the evolution's response to preventing these dust storms from occurring.
It's a windy zone. It's a windy part of the nation.
Mm-hmm.
People describe it as like there's a constant breeze all the time. You can hear it. Mike, do you happen to be from the Midwest?
I am from the opposite of that. I'm from Boston. So.
Perfect. Perfect. But none of us are from the Midwest.
It was a swing.
supposedly
really windy.
Okay. I grew up in Colorado.
Well,
but that's the mountain. You were more east Colorado, right?
Which corner of Colorado?
Nothing but plains. Yes,
not the plains.
I was at the foot of the mountains near the plains. I've driven through them, driven through Kansas many a times, through Oklahoma. But yes, I didn't grow up on those plains.
But your point is taken. It's windy and the grass is there to prevent the wind from blowing all the dust around.
Yes, but they're taking out the grass. They're plowing multiple plowing every season.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know much about farming.
I think multiple plowing is vigorous a technical
plowing.
Term.
Plowed multiple
plowing was
vigorously.
Deep.
Right.
And this contributes to soil erosion.
Mm-hmm.
And what you have is a loose soil
mm-hmm.
and a windy area.
Yep. Tough combo. And then
to make things worse, a drought.
Do we put the drought on the board? Is that like, I mean, it's kind of like blaming Mother Nature, but.
No, but I think we do need to, because this was the perfect dust storm.
Right.
Well, wait, can we, in addition, or maybe instead of the drought, what my understanding is that for an amount of time before the really bad drought that hit in the 30s, it was uncharacteristically wet for like a decade.
Yeah,
sure.
That caused farmers maybe to have an unearned sense of confidence in what they were doing.
Right.
100%, Mike.
And to your point, Mike, there was also a drought in the late 1800s.
Oh.
So in the 1890s, there was a drought. And, you know, obviously people knew that, or, you know, you have to assume that a good portion of them did. And they sort of ignored that despite there being a particularly wet decade in the 20s. They were like, this is the way it will be for
well,
the
I guess that goes to like how closely, other than just like memory and like word of mouth, like how close are they tracking weather trends back in like the mid to late 1800s, right?
Yeah, like, the weatherman was probably like an old guy on a porch.
No, like, remember the Galveston hurricane, there was already the weather system.
But that was the just national starting weather system in like the early 1900s, right?
Early 1900s, that's true.
So
but
it's kind of like, they're just starting to realize the importance, I guess, of like trends, I guess, is Mike's point. Like if there's a surplus, then you should note the times that there wasn't the surplus and kind of factor that in.
Oh, and that's right. That's the whole thing of rain follows the plow, right? They thought they were right because they showed up and then it was wet for a while. I never put that together.
I mean, manifest destiny is, it'll really mess with you.
Yeah.
It really gave them the kind of confidence that they really should not have had.
Just two words next to each other just fills you with just unbridled hope and wisdom, I guess.
Well, let's talk about the rain follows the plow, because that was a terrible misconception at the time. I mean, think about this. This is they believed that establishing farming would bring an increase in rainfall. Like, talk about not understanding Mother Nature.
That's like a main character syndrome. Like, you think you're the center of the universe, wherever you go, it's going to work out for you, right? Or you're the most important part of it.
Get it up on the board.
It really blows my mind. Rain follows the plow. We're just going to keep saying these words, manifest destiny. It's our manifest destiny.
I mean, if you guys want to, we can be a little bit like armchair psychoanalysis here and think about, you know, it takes a certain mentality to be a farmer. And, you know, in a sense, and there was an interviewer on this Ken Burns documentary who said all farmers are gamblers. Mm. And what you're basically, or there was another term they used, which is next year people. You always have to believe in having a good crop and in, you know, sowing in excess of what you put down. So I don't know if there's like a farmer's mentality that, but it's like a survival mechanism because you really have to. So I respect it. I don't want to put it up on the board and blame that kind of mentality.
No, you're right. Because there has to be a balance, right? But I think that's the lack of balance.
I
so
feel like
you need
Mike,
to have some hope.
I feel like Mike said it earlier when he said it was like ill. I don't know what you said, Mike, but it was like ill or something confidence, like ill-advised or unearned confidence.
Oh, unearned confidence.
Yeah, ooh. I feel like that kind of.
I mean, but they were also, at least once you start talking post-World War I, they saw a lot of returns for how expensive their crop was made just by global events. So it's like, you know, they won the lottery in a sense, but I guess maybe after you win the lottery, that should be your lesson, that your ticket came in and you got to get out of the game.
Right. It's like going back to the same mobile station after the lottery ticket has already been given out.
You mean the same gas station, yeah.
Like, you know, they want to stick to it. Maybe they shouldn't be sticking to it. Maybe they shouldn't be next year people. But, you know, last year or 2 years ago was pretty good.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Farming is a dangerous game. It is a betting game, you know?
It's a betting game.
And I imagine they also, you know, like Rebecca said, they've got debt, right? They bought
Yeah.
Right? You said that they've like they bought equipment in order to reach the extreme demand of supply that was placed on them by the government. Now they've got tons of debt. So they it's like they maybe have this mindset of like next year will be good, and they have all of this debt that they have to pay off.
Right.
Right.
We and can't they had stop now.
And you had the guaranteed, like, you know, the government's like, we're going to guarantee the high price for all of that. But it again, it kind of goes into like, and you have the government telling you like, this is for the war effort. So like, it's hard to say no to that because you don't want to feel like unpatriotic. But if you're, if you have the instinct to be like, okay, but I'm looking down the road as a farmer, because I'm a betting man, and that's what I have to do is like assume 1 or 2 years out. If this changes in any way, I'm worried about how that might affect my annual operation, but like, how do you push back in like a wartime and a bust time from the US government?
Right. Like, yeah, you can't be like, this field has to go fallow for a little while because all of the the topsoil nutrients are gone.
Exactly.
While World War I is happening.
Mm-hmm. Right. You can't, you can't really plan that. You can't.
No.
But, and you know, something I feel like that they didn't see coming was this heat wave that came in 1934 to 36.
Right.
Do we put the heat wave on the board?
Yeah, maybe. So there's a heat wave that comes, and it's extreme high temperatures, which top 100 degrees sometimes. The crops are withering. It's creating drought conditions. The soil is getting very dry, and this topsoil then starts blowing into the air because of this drought. This is from ThoughtCo. An 88-year drought started in 1931 with hotter than usual temperatures. Winter's prevailing winds took their toll on the cleared terrain, unprotected by indigenous grasses that once grew there. By 1932, the wind picked up and the sky went black in the middle of the day when a 200-mile-wide dirt cloud ascended from the ground. Known as a black blizzard, the topsoil tumbled over everything in its path as it blew away. 14 of these black blizzards blew in 1932. There were 38 in 1933. In 1934, 110 black blizzards blew.
Wow.
Some of these, so it keeps going
up. Oh my
up.
God.
Mm-hmm. Some of these black blizzards unleashed large amounts of static electricity, enough to knock someone to the ground or short out an engine. This is from CBS News. On Black Sunday in the Oklahoma Panhandle, April 14, 1935. Thelma Beaumont Campbell described her terror to author Amy D. Stevens as a dust storm enveloped her home. Quote, we could see it rolling toward us at a terrific speed like a prairie fire. The wind was so strong that we heard later it had broken the wind gauges. When it hit, everything became very still and we were enveloped in this terrible blackness. We couldn't see our hand in front of our face. Some people thought they had been struck blind. So this is happening all the time.
This is terrifying.
This is horrifying.
As a personal anecdote, I went to Burning Man 1 year.
You went
ago.
To Burning Man?
I went to Burning Man. And
cool.
The day that we arrived, there was, if for those who don't know, it basically takes like place on the playa, which is like kind of like a dried up massive lake bed in the middle of the desert. So it has that kind of similar like crusted, dried, like bottom of the lake dust material. And there was a massive windstorm and the dust was all over, like it was taking over the entire, you know, Burning Man village. And we were trying to like go to the center camp to find friends who were there and put in a message about where we were. And I remember biking with my friends and they were maybe like 3 feet in front of me and suddenly they would just disappear. Like you could not see them. And I think 4 or 5 people died that day because the dust was so intense that they got run over by people driving in trying to find their camps. That to me, I remember having like extreme anxiety because I was arriving in this kind of crazy place and I was like, what did I get myself into? Like, this seems terrifying. So I can't imagine doing that regularly just like in your day-to-day life. It's a terrifying experience to be in a dust storm where you feel like you can't even see your hand like inches from your face.
There are photos of posts like online, I guess something that happened later on. This was with the New Deal.
Mm-hmm.
They were trying to get government support to like help these farmers, mm-hmm. and Roosevelt sent out a photographer to take photos of people that were living in this area and you know, going through these dust storms. And the dust would move dust around so much that there would suddenly be like a mountain of dust and you couldn't get into your house.
Right,
so you'd have to like dig yourself out of the house. Or fences. This was another thing that would happen. The dust would create like little mountains that would then make fences obsolete, because you could just like walk over a fence like a little mountain. And so like cows and livestock would just
wander off.
Leave. Right, yeah, and get right. lost. It wreaked havoc.
One of the descriptions that I read was that it was as fine as like bread flour, which is wild to think about.
And then that would be what you were breathing all the time.
Oh god.
That would be inside your home all the time, because it would get in through crevices.
Fear unlocked for sure.
I feel like it's just a reminder.
Roof for a year, and
oh my god,
yeah. PTSD. Like that gave me PTSD. I don't think I would survive a dust storm.
No, me neither.
You'd be wishing for the leaky roof. I think it's just a reminder that, like, in the end, Mother Nature's going to win.
Right? Going to get through.
Like, she just has so many tricks up her sleeve.
She does, and we innovate and like we like advance ourselves technologically, and in, you know, infrastructure we're constantly updating with new information.
Right.
But she always is like, but then this, and you're like, right, you win.
Yeah,
it's like Jeff Goldblum in Jurassic Park. Nature finds a way.
Life finds a way.
I'll have to rewatch it, but I think it's nature finds a way.
He should say nature.
Yeah.
They probably meant to rewrite that. I'm pretty sure it's nature, but anyway.
Good job, fact checker, Chris.
Another thing I want to talk about is how things seem to, like the government, the didn't seem to care about what was happening until they saw themselves being affected by these dust storms, which is a classic thing we see here at the Alarmists, which is not caring until it affects the rich mentality, right?
Mm-hmm.
These are two instances. Okay, this is from How Stuff Works. It took millions of tons of dirt and debris blowing from the plains all the way to Washington, D.C., known as Black Sunday, to move Congress to pass the Soil Conservation Act and establish the Soil Conservation Service under the Department of Agriculture. The SCS promoted healthy soil management and farming practices and paid farmers to put such methods to work on their farms. The legacy of the service's practices such as irrigation, crop diversity, and no-till farming continue in the plains today. In March of 1935, this is from weather.gov. In March of 1935, several weeks before the Black Sunday, one of President Roosevelt's advisors, Hugh Hammond Bennett, testified before Congress about the need for better soil conservation techniques. Ironically, dust from the Great Plains was transported all the way to the East Coast, blotting out the sun even in the nation's capital. Mr. Bennett only needed to point out the window to the evidence supporting his position and say, quote, "This gentleman is what I've been talking about." Congress passed the Soil Conservation Act before the end of the year.
Must have felt good for Bennett to, like, a couple weeks prior have been like, "Guys, dust, oil, soil conservation." And then everyone's like, "Oh, what a funny guy. Don't you love that weird guy who talks about soil and stuff?" The
guy's always
and
going
then,
on
like,
about dust.
A week
dust.
Later, he's also always going on about dust, that guy. I love having him around. And then there, he's like, "No, check it out.
Look outside, dude.
You must have felt vindicated.
Yeah.
I told you it was amazing. It's here.
But like, seriously, I mean, we see this happen all the time. I mean, recently, you know, there were the fires, right? And all of a sudden, like, this fires are happening in Canada and like in parts of the country that are, you know, that have less population. And all of a sudden the smoke hits New York City and everybody cares.
Everyone's talking. Well, meanwhile, it was like that was happening in California forever. And there was so much talk, but like, no, I'm, you know, I mean, obviously there's talk about it, but then it happened in New York City. It was like, we can't keep doing this.
Yeah, with like one notable exception being that nothing has been done.
Right. Exactly.
Well, yeah. We forgot about it. Yeah. That was a one-timer.
Man, this is bad, huh?
Oh, well. Air purifier, right?
Yeah. Good luck, everybody.
I know.
So it's a problem. Like, that had to be dealt with, and it wasn't dealt with.
It's like
we're running out of time, but like,
I feel like
there's still so much to cover.
No, yeah. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, go.
I was just going to make a silly analogy where it's like we have these, you know, like if you look at like, if America is like a household, right? And like, you know, you have that big problem that you want to deal with, like maybe Mike's leaky roof. It's going to take a lot of time and money to deal with it. So you kind of procrastinate it and you're just like, it's not raining today, so I'm not really going to worry about it. But like, you know, it's going to be a disaster in the future, but you just don't do it. I feel like we just have so many leaky spots on our roof as a country. But we don't want to put in the time and effort until it's too late and it's streaming through our roof. And we're like, oh my God, this is a disaster.
Right.
I don't know how you change that mentality. Like, I mean, I guess it is like until the richies, it starts affecting the rich, but even they are kind of like putting off the real work.
They'll be fine. Their roofs are fine. So.
Right.
Well, you know, Mark Zuckerberg has his massive Hawaiian compound or whatever.
Right, they're gonna fly to space and get out of here anyway, I guess, right?
Yeah. That actually makes me think. I'm really stuck on something that Rebecca said, and it makes me want to add someone to the board. Am I allowed?
Please. Yes.
I mean,
by all means.
Can we put the banks on the board?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, if they're, you know, this is, like I said, everything I know about the Dust Bowl I get from the Grapes of Wrath. But there's this moment where someone is talking about, it's the guy who comes and plows over like the Jode family homestead. And he says something like, you know, you want to make this between you and me, between us as people. But like, this is between you and the bank. Like the bank just needs to grow. It needs to grow and grow and grow, and it needs its money. And so I'm here, you know, they're going to pay me $3 a day to tractor over this field, and I'm going to give it to whoever has bought it. And then they're going to give money to the bank because the bank wants their returns on, you know, for all of the debt that they need to collect. And, you know, and it needs to keep growing, and they need to always make more and more money.
I think that's a really important point. I think we should put that up on the board, absolutely, because something we haven't discussed yet is how the Depression, the Great Depression, affected this disaster, and it has everything to do with the banks. So in 1929, there's a stock market crash, of course, and the people in Oklahoma and the Panhandle are like, well, it's not going to really affect us, right? That's a big city problem. They happen to have a really good crop for those 2 years, for 1930 and 1931. There's a lot of rain. They're like, okay, it's fine. People are buying more machinery. They're accruing debt. But then it starts to affect them because the prices of wheat go down. And remember I had said earlier where they were paying up to like $2 a bushel. Well, now it's going down like to the point where at a certain point it was at 25 cents a bushel.
Whoa.
Right.
So people, even before it got down to 25 cents, you know, it's a, you know, 95, 70 cents a bushel. They're like, okay, well, this is not good, but what I could do is plant more wheat and double my production.
Right, to sell no, more to make the, more.
That's going to make right.
And I'll
worse.
Make as much as I... Exactly.
Man, so much of history and is just watching a tragedy in slow motion, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So God. True.
So the price of wheat keeps going down. Now farmers are like, well, it's not sustainable. It's costing me more money to plant it than it is than I'm going to be able to recoup. The banks start closing. Houses begin to get foreclosed on.
Right.
And people are starting to be left homeless. There's a huge migration that happens. On top of that, this is when the dust pneumonia really starts affecting people. I mean, talk about a recipe for disaster.
Right.
It's all coming together in like 1935. At this point, it's unsustainable. People are just like leaving their homes, going out to California, trying to migrate and find other places where they can work. And the aid doesn't come soon enough.
Right.
Yeah. It kind of goes back. I mean, it's just like what Mike's saying. It's the banks. It's capitalism. It's that like, you know, need for continuous growth. But like sometimes things change. Like it's how sustainable is that?
Right.
You're feeding the problem by trying to like overcompensate for the loss of revenue, which only makes it worse.
Yeah. Mm. But so, we've already created the monster.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Because you got to keep feeding the monster and it has to keep growing.
Mm-hmm. With wheat too.
So before we go, actually, can we just add Herbert Hoover? Just throw him on there. He was the president when the Depression hit, or when the stock market, I guess.
So for causing this mess, yeah, I feel like that's a good idea.
Just throw him up there. I don't know if he's to blame for the Dust Bowl. I think it's a bit of a stretch, but I don't know.
I mean, we'll see. We'll because see. Like I feel like so many of these acts, the Homestead Act, were established way before his time, right? So this was kind of like a problem that was already happening, but
okay.
It did. Yeah, I mean, the Depression was really the catalyst.
Okay. All right.
Let's do it.
Okay, so let's take a quick break and then start knocking things off the board.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Who's to blame for the Dust Bowl? Manifest Destiny, federal land policies promoting farming, U.S. government, World War I, the wheat bubble, new farming techniques, inexperienced farmers, briefcase farmers, drought, rain follows the plow mentality, main character syndrome, unearned confidence, heat wave, not caring until it affects the rich mentality, the banks, or Herbert Hoover.
Ooh. And I feel like the banks can also be slash the depression, because I feel like the depression should be on here.
Sure. Right.
Off the bat, I feel like we could take the new farming techniques off, I wonder.
I agree with that. I think that it's, you know, who did the new farming techniques? They really are maybe the people to blame.
Right.
You know, the inexperienced not as like the final explanation of placing blame, but as figuring out what right. can be removed.
Yes. I also feel like the briefcase farmers, while they would have been, I'm sure, very annoying to the locals.
It feels like we were already in it. That like if they're coming, it's because they know there's like money to be made. So like the process
right.
is
right.
They're certainly not helping, but
yeah.
I mean, if we're going to eliminate the briefcase farmers, I want to eliminate the inexperienced farmers.
I think that's fair.
I mean, you know, to me, the price of the crops and the sort of the artificial inflation of the price of the crops as sort of, and including the wheat bubble, as we're calling it, is more what the driver of the farming practices.
Versus showing up and having the time to be like, okay, we're in a new land. Like, what is this region? What's the agriculture? What are best practices? It was just like, go, go,
right.
go.
Right.
Yeah. And then I feel like we could take the drought off, because
how do you blame
that right. was nature just being cyclical.
And yeah. and again, like the process had kind of already started when the drought hit.
Right. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
And the heat wave. The heat wave
exacerbated things, but again, I don't think it's going to be the thing that you're going to blame at the end of the day.
So we can take that off.
Manifest Destiny feels a bit vague for me to blame in this case.
You think so? I don't think so.
Well,
I feel like there's something between Manifest Destiny, rain follows the plow mentality, and unearned confidence and main character syndrome.
Yeah. Mm. Which one do we want to kind of lift out as being encompassing those four? Main character syndrome? weird to call it that.
It's funny to think of main character syndrome as like a modern instance of Manifest Destiny. That's like really kind of bleak as hell, but it doesn't feel entirely wrong.
No, it doesn't. It feels weirdly accurate.
Let's
fold Manifest Destiny into that, and unearned confidence will fold into that as well.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, the rain follows the plow is so specific to the Dust Bowl.
Right.
But that arrogance is different.
There. I agree with that, Clayton. Yeah, that it has that same arrogance to it.
Mm-hmm.
As something like main character syndrome, right. having unearned right. confidence. You know, I'm here now, so the land will get better, of course.
Right.
And so the rain will come because it knows that I need it.
Yeah, I brought this plow.
I bought a plow. I need it. Yeah. So then do we fold that into main character syndrome, you think? Rain follows the plow?
Or vice versa.
Or vice
we
versa.
Fold main character. Yeah.
You want to fold main character into rain follows the plow. Okay.
Yeah.
And maybe we can kind of roll the World War I into the U.S. government.
Okay.
I mean, it's a tough call because, they needed that wheat, and the wheat was... But the war, I guess, like...
But they created the wheat bubble. The U.S. government created the wheat bubble.
I know. And that's what I'm saying. But it was as a result, or mainly because of wanting to feed...
The troops and the allies in Europe. War. Yeah.
Right.
So you almost... Then maybe you fold... Yeah, like what's the... I mean, we were also expanding to as a country, right? It wasn't so... But it was the war that really sped it up.
I think so.
And like, so then, I don't... Do we know if there were Part of me wants to know whether or not there were better options for additional wheat or food that weren't pursued instead of, you know, like, did we choose to do the bad thing because it was the only option or because it was like the most expedient, convenient option?
Maybe
it killed two birds with one stone too.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I am cruising towards blaming the government.
Same here. Same here. It's going to be hard not to, but.
Okay. So let's take the war off.
Okay. Okay.
And I feel like the not caring until it affects the rich mentality can fold into
the government.
That's
the rich people can basically let run the government. So.
Well, exactly.
Oh boy. Mm.
Now,
we can fold Hoover, I think.
Hoover into the Depression, we can fold him into.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, so we're left with five good ones. What do we think here? We've got federal land policies promoting farming, the U.S. government, the wheat bubble, rain follows the plow mentality, and the banks / the Depression.
I think you put the wheat bubble in the U.S. government.
And I think federal land policies, too, because those were passed by the government.
Right. Yeah. That feels right to me.
Okay.
So it's really just the three, the government, the rain follows the plow, and the bank / the Depression.
Like a big dust storm on the horizon, I feel like the U.S. government is coming. The blaming the U.S. government is coming ever closer.
Mm. But I want to make it specific. I want to make it specific. It's not just like the U.S. government.
Okay.
I feel
okay.
like it was there. It was their promoting of expansion.
Right.
Right? That really set off.
And like demands of hyperproduction.
Yeah.
Yes. U.S. government demands of hyperproduction. Hyperproduction. No, I like that. The U.S. government's demands for hyperproduction.
Okay.
Okay.
That to me is very specific. And I feel like we can send that to the alarmist jail and then we can slap the rain follows the plow mentality.
Oh.
Interesting. See, I just want to push back on the rain follows the plow mentality because to me that speaks a little bit to the sort of twinkle in the eye hope that you have to even start any business, not just farming. You have to believe in the future. And now I know that what you're going to say is that, yes, you also have to know your area and trust and respect experts and history and knowledge about the subject, which is perhaps was overlooked a little bit by the farmer. But I also think part of what being a farmer is just believing in tomorrow. And that I hate to put that. I would hate to slap that.
You would have been that guy.
I probably would have.
Is what this is all telling me.
I probably would have.
Putting
optimism slapping optimism.
That's what I was going to say. Like, it feels like what you're saying is this is blaming people who were using the only information they were in possession of.
Right. It's true.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's true.
Of the time. But I think that's important.
Of the time. But I'm not trying to send slap optimism here. What I'm trying to slap here is the lack of balance when it comes to optimism. You can't just have like pure optimism and no alarmism. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. You have to be prepared, be conscious, be, you know, like if you're gambling on something like rain. You have to assume it might not go your way all the time.
Okay. You got to look at the world around you and go, there's something going on here.
Well, it also feels
there's
like
something bigger than me.
It feels like propaganda, though, because like it's not like they were, this is the first, like they had been farming and certainly there were failures in crops. Like I wonder how much of the rain follows the plow was just like almost like a slogan to convince farmers or maybe people who are new to farming to take it up, to like adopt that confidence or that optimism. I mean, that sounds a bit like, you know, like government propaganda. It's a little bleak, but
all right. No, but I think balance, to Rebecca's point, is key. I think balance, as long as we don't just slapping optimism, but it's a lack of balance.
I think it's less optimism and more like American exceptionalism. Like we're going to, like, no matter, we are so good, like we don't fail kind of thing, where it's like, but gotcha. Like, read the history, read the tea leaves. Like,
okay, I'm on board.
not to throw an additional wrench in the works here, but I do feel a little bit, you know, like 2008, the banks are getting off a little bit easier than they should.
Oh, yeah. Damn, Mike. Jeez,
so true. They always do.
They always do.
Too big to fail, that stuff. We need them.
Too complicated them for lay people to get accurately mad at.
Gosh.
Okay, so I'm going to call it. Rain follows the plow mentality, you're getting the big slap. U.S. government demands for hyperproduction, you're going to the alarmist jail. And to be clear, I mean, it is U.S. government. It failed us. It was a big oopsie daisy.
Mm-hmm. A big oopsie daisy.
Yep.
Well, thank you so much, Mike, for helping us today. I mean, I feel like we couldn't have gotten to the bottom of the Dust Bowl without you.
Thank you so much for having me. It was an honor to put the United States government in jail.
Thank you for your help with that.
Not the first time, won't be the last.
Won't be the last. Nope.
In the aftermath, the Dust Bowl and the suffering endured by those who survived it was captured in the American classic, The Grapes of Wrath. In 2020, more than eight decades later, the summer of 1936 remains the hottest summer on record in the U.S. However, new research finds that the heat waves that powered the Dust Bowl are now 2.5 times more likely to happen again in our modern climate, due to another type of man-made crisis, climate change. The Alarmist is now on Patreon. Subscribe and get ad-free content along with bonus episodes. Go to patreon.com/thealarmist or check out the link in our show description. Visit our website, www.thealarmistpodcast.com, and follow us on Instagram, @thealarmistpodcast, and on Twitter, @alarmistthe. You can also send us your thoughts via email to thealarmistpodcast@gmail.com. Today's episode was produced and engineered by Clayton Early, with editing by Molly Hockey, and fact-checking by Chris Smith. Thank you to our associate producer and researcher, Crystal Dinsberg. The Alarmist is executive produced by Rebecca Delgado Smith. Tune in next week. We'll be discussing the Chris Benoit double murder and suicide. The Alarmist. Powered by Acast.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact? You can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about United Healthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.